Broadcasting from Cincinnati, you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Podcast, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host, Ringside Robert. And we have a great show for you today, and as always, you can catch us on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com. And today we're going to talk about the British invasion. They took over the Masters yesterday on Sunday, then they took over the Heavyweight Championship of the World this Saturday. We'll have all the details for you. Also, we're going to talk about, did you waste the $70 on the Pacquiao-Bradley pay-per-view? We did, and we'll tell you all about it here. Our history lesson this week goes back to April 4th, 2009, with Edwin Valero versus Antonio Pitalua for the vacant WBC lightweight title. But first, we start with the number 12. Just like Sesame Street, we start with a number here. That's how many champions that Britain has right now. They won everything, including the Masters. British players in the Masters came in 1-2 on Sunday. Unbelievable, unbelievable for Britain this weekend. This was a British weekend for sure.
And only two British golfers have ever won the Masters.
I think, yeah, that's right, man. That's crazy.
Yeah, crazy.
How tough was it for Jordan Spieth to put that jacket on that guy, man? After like that,
he said after the ceremony, he said, "I hope I never have to do that again." You know?
Right. Yeah, oh, God. Yeah, can you imagine? You know. I don't even think it would have been so bad, and I know we're starting on golf here, but I don't even think it would have been so bad if, like, say, Spieth came in, like, 15th, or he just completely did a tank job and just, you know, maybe missed the cut or something like that. It really wouldn't have been that bad.
Right.
But the fact that it happened the way it happened.
Well, and he led for seven consecutive rounds, and no other golfer in Masters history, and we're talking 80 years, had ever led seven consecutive rounds. That's almost two complete tournaments, because there's four rounds in each tournament. So, and you think about that, 80 years of golf and all the great golfers over the years, for him to be the only one to ever accomplish that, and for him to melt down in the final nine holes, Of course, that's happened before, but yesterday was epic.
Yeah, that's a tough thing, man. That's a tough thing, man. But let's shift gears and go back to boxing here.
Absolutely.
Anthony Joshua versus Prince Charles Martin. All I can say is, wow. What can you really say about this fight, man? Charles Martin looked awful from the second the bell rang. He had very little head movement, very little footwork, and he looked horrible. On the flip side, Anthony Joshua looked like the opposite. He looked amazing. Joshua easily dominated the first round with jabs and power shots. Martin just looked very confused in there. He had no idea on how to fight Joshua. Joshua started to open up a little bit more in the second round. The one thing I noticed in this fight was that Joshua was able to really counter effectively. And in the second round, Joshua ducked under a Martin jab and countered with a perfect straight right that sent Martin to the canvas. Martin actually beat the count but was visibly shaken. Literally seconds later, Martin threw the exact same punch and was then hit with the exact same punch, a straight right hand. He looked like he pulled back just slightly. It wasn't even like the Floyd Mayweather, like that rapid pull counter. It was just he missed him. You know, he just slightly got out of the way, countered him with another, the same exact right hand that he was caught with just moments before. Charles Martin, when he hit the deck, you could tell he was shaking. I mean, he hit hard. And then he got up, and he actually raised up, you know, kind of like did a sit-up, and he had a big smile on his face, like, yeah, you got me. He tried to get up. The referee came over, counted, and as he was counting, Martin got to his knees. And you could tell, I mean, like I said, he was still shaking. The referee hit 10, and he's right in front of Martin, counting him. The referee hit 10, Martin jumps up, he missed the count. He protested, you know, he protested lightly, but clearly was in no shape to continue.
Yeah, I think it was after the first knockdown, you could see Charles Martin looking over at his corner like, what the hell just happened to me? What did I just get hit with, you know? And like, because, you know, Martin had never been put on the canvas before as a professional, so it came as a complete shock, but you could tell after that the fight was... I was surprised, actually, that he was able to get up, and the referee allowed it to continue, because from the first shot, you could tell there wasn't anything left of Charles Martin, and all I can say is I hope Al Haymon and the PBC and all those in charge enjoy the $5 million that Charles Martin got, because now you only have one piece of the heavyweight title left, and after May 21st, you may not even have that.
That ain't no cupcake going to Russia,
yeah,
man. I tell you what,
yeah,
that's no cupcake with Deontay Wilder going to fight Povetkin in Russia.
Yeah.
You know.
So, no, congratulations to Joshua, but...
I thought Joshua fought a really good fight, man. I thought he did, yeah. I thought he looked real good.
But be prepared, folks, for lots of UK defenses with fighters that we've never really heard of, or, you know, because we're going to...
Dylan White and who's the other guys he fought? I mean, you can't even name them.
Yeah. Let's be honest. Anthony Joshua looked good against a guy he was supposed to look good against. I mean, Charles Martin shouldn't have even had this title in the first place.
You're right. Charles Martin didn't look good in his last fight, and he won that. You know, the guy snapped his knee in half or whatever he did. You know, he didn't look great in that fight. He didn't look good in the fights leading up to this.
No.
The fact that he had a title just was like, seriously?
I mean, and we can all complain about Eddie Hearn and company all we want, but they saw a vulture that they could take advantage of, and they offered enough money to get him to hop on a plane, and like I told everybody last week, he was going to hop on that plane, fly to the UK, and come home empty-handed, except $5 million. That's exactly what occurred. And, look, be prepared for lots of soft title defenses, because let's face it, Anthony Joshua looked good against the guy he was supposed to look good against,
right,
and he's only had 16 fights, but, you know, you can't name hardly any of them. They're probably going to put him back in the developmental stage, but these are all going to be title defenses.
Right, right. I mean, he hasn't fought a tough, tough opponent yet. And I've heard, you know, in reading the boards and everything like that, you hear like, Joshua's the best one. You know, he's better than Fury. He's better than Wilder. He's the best heavyweight out there now.
Well, he might be later on, Eric, but not right now. He's too green.
You know, I mean, I tell you, you know, the thing is, man, is like, you know, I think he's got a load of potential. I think he's the next guy. I really do. But, you know, to say that he's better than Wilder right now, to say he's better than Fury right now, I mean, seriously? Come on, man. You know?
I could see Eddie Hearn and company, and obviously Eddie Hearn doesn't promote Tyson Fury because he planned on supposedly putting up a card against him, which is stupid, you know, and I'm glad that's not going to happen. We'll talk about that later, but I could see the UK faction of boxing here, you know, setting up a super fight down the road, provided that Fury gets by Klitschko again and what have you. And, of course, anything in the heavyweight division, let's face it, folks, all these fights are up in the air now because Povetkin having to go over to Russia. Wilder going over to Russia. I mean, as we just saw on the weekend, when a fighter leaves his comfort zone and goes outside the United States, there's a good chance he's going to wind up coming home empty-handed, either because of a hometown decision or you get put to sleep like Martin did.
Yeah, it's definitely not easy. I mean, this is going to tell you a lot about Wilder. I think this defense coming up against Povetkin, this is going to tell you a lot about Wilder because, you know, he's got to go to Russia and he's got to go to, you know, and defend this guy. And Povetkin's not really a cupcake. He's a good, good fighter. On paper, Deontay should take care of this, but there's always that unknown, you know, when you go to Russia, and not that anything's different over there as far as, like, you know, hometown judges or anything like that. I'm not honestly, I'm not really worried about that. I'm worried about the effect of, like, going to the lion's den, you know what I mean? That's a big deal. But
exactly.
On the flip side of that, he's had two opponents in Alabama now. So, hey, if he does this, he's a true world champion.
He's had two opponents in Alabama and one in Brooklyn.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think he'll get through this.
Yeah.
But as far as Anthony Joshua goes, I'm looking at the ratings right now in the IBF. 1 and 2 are not rated. You got Glaskov, which will probably be his first opponent, I would imagine.
Yeah, Pulev,
mm-hmm. the guy that got mangled against Klitschko, and then you got Derek Chisora, the washed up. You got David Hay. You got a ton of stiffs he can fight. You got a ton of stiffs that he's going to fight. Erkan Tepper is the number 3 rated heavyweight by the IPF.
And I don't even know who that is.
Right. Me neither. So let that soak in for a little while. So he's got a ton of stiffs he's going to face. I wouldn't see that. You're not going to see him stateside anytime soon.
No, and I don't think you'll see all of his title defenses on U.S. TV unless he fights somebody like a David Hay, a big, big name. I could see the British public falling all over that, by the way. David Hay and Anthony Joshua. I could see the UK people going nuts over that.
Yeah. It's not the same talent pool, but whatever. I mean, not for nothing, but you got 12. The most notable are the Jackal, Frampton, Kell Brook, and now Anthony Joshua.
Right.
Carl Frampton is a real deal because he's fighting guys. He's fighting live bodies.
He's trying to set up a fight with Leo Santa Cruz, supposedly.
Right.
So.
They're fighting live bodies over there.
Yeah.
But this guy right here, Joshua, he ain't going to fight a live body anytime soon. And then your boy, Kell Brook. He's not fighting anybody live anytime soon.
Well,
Even Amir Khan stepped up. I mean, you say what you want about Amir Khan, but hey, man, it took brass to go over there and fight Canelo, and to go and
like we said last week, it's time for Kell Brook to get on the road and come and actually defend his title. He's had enough soft touches. There are plenty of people at 147 that are currently available that he could fight, a.k.a. Danny Garcia, somebody like that.
You're in the toughest weight class in the world, 147.
Yep. And there you go.
Fighting stiffs. That's what he's doing. He's fighting stiffs.
Yep.
And Eddie Hearn. You could thank Eddie Hearn because I know darn well Kell Brook wants to fight somebody. Anthony Joshua wants to fight somebody. They're good fighters, and what you're going to do is you're going to end up hurting them by putting them against these soft touches.
I know that 2 out of those 3 soft touches that Brooke had were unfortunate mandatory title defenses, which says something about the IBF.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not even 100% sure about that. I mean, I'm not disputing the fact they were mandatory, but if Kell Brook said he wanted to fight Danny Garcia and they try to put that fight together, or he wanted to fight such and such and put that fight together, come on. Milking it is what they're doing.
Even the sanctioning body would gladly accept a bigger fight because they get a bigger sanctioning fee. So,
there you go.
You have to lay this at Eddie Hearn's door here. It's time for Special K, as he's called, to step up to the plate and get somebody real in the ring. I mean, you beat a real champion in Porter, although I don't like how that fight was. I don't like how that fight was done with all the holding and garbage. But he did beat a legitimate person in Porter. Okay, I understand that JoJo Dan was mandatory, but. The other two after that, Frankie Gavin, and then you had another supposed mandatory with Kevin Bisier. Are you serious? Come on. Get on an airplane, get your butt over here, sign a contract, fight somebody that knows how to hurt you, and show us what you really got.
Well, get used to it, because Anthony Joshua is going to do the same thing. And I love Anthony Joshua, and I've been saying it for a long time now. I think he's the next guy. Turns out Saturday he was the next guy. Now he's a heavyweight champion. But now you don't get to put this guy back in development mode. He's got to fight a live body, which Eddie Hearn is a master at, you know, at getting people around.
Eric,
you know,
Eric, I could see somebody that we're going to talk about later on in the show. We managing to step into the ring and get the fight that he wants. Shannon Briggs.
You know darn well that's coming. You know if he beats David Haye, he ain't going to beat David Haye, but who knows. But David Haye, they're going to sell David Haye. They're going to try to sell David Haye and Anthony Joshua as the next big fight. And that's
absolutely
far from a big fight. It's not even funny. It's going to be huge in London.
Of course it is.
I don't understand that, though. I mean, they know boxing better than anybody, so they got two UK guys, and that makes it a competitive fight.
Believe me, after being on the previous show that I used to be on and talking to enough UK people that actually used to call into the show, I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt, all you have to do over there is put two UK fighters in the ring and they go absolutely gaga over it. So yes, it will be a major deal in the United Kingdom.
I don't get it, man. I don't get it.
Yeah.
But Anthony Joshua wasn't the only one, Englishman to win on Saturday. Lee Selby also won. He had a good defense of his title. IBF featherweight champion Lee Selby. He got knocked down in the early going, man. I think it was in round two.
Yeah, it was.
Sharp left hook, man, by Eric Hunter from Philadelphia. Put him on the deck, man. And I thought, honestly, man, when you look at it, I thought Hunter was the better boxer here. He looked like he knew, you know, he was better defensively. The problem was he just didn't throw enough shots. Selby beat him just by being busier.
Yeah, and
that was kind of my take on it, man.
And also, do you think that the referee interfered a bit too much in this fight?
That referee was horrible. That referee was just horrible. Lee Selby didn't need the referee's help in this one. Come on. In all fairness, though, this wouldn't have been the first time that Hunter, from what I understand, he was disqualified for low shots.
Criticize. You can criticize commentators all you want, but I love the British guys because they were all over this. Because before the fight, they even said we have to watch out for low blows. This guy has a history, and sure enough, throughout the fight, that's what we saw.
Right, but I thought the referee was a little bit overzealous, and you know, I don't know. I don't really know that the. You know, he was talking about disqualifying him and everything like that. He kind of took the, you know, if Hunter had any kind of comeback in him, it was pretty much thwarted there, you know. So, I thought he did okay. I thought Selby looked pretty good. I thought Selby looked pretty good. Again, man, you kind of, I like Selby a lot, and I've talked about Lee Selby before. I like him a lot. Just kind of wondering where he goes if he fights anybody with...
I know he said before this fight he was very unhappy with his U.S. debut because he's very unhappy with his performance. I think if it's up to Lee Selby, I think he'll want to come back over here and fight somebody better and put on a better performance. But again, we're talking about Eddie Hearn. Is Eddie Hearn going to step in the way and put somebody in there that shouldn't be?
Well, probably. That would make sense. I mean, you know, but Lee Selby's in that Lions den, too. At featherweight, he's got Leo Santa Cruz, Gary Russell Jr., Lomachenko.
And you got Carl Frampton, too, that's going to move up to fight Santa Cruz. And later on, you could see Frampton and Selby actually fighting.
That's a huge fight. Now, you want to talk about an English fight, that's a huge fight.
Yeah.
Because those are two competitive guys. Those are two guys that are in their prime and ready to go.
Yeah.
That's a good fight. Yeah. I don't know that, Leo Santa Cruz against Selby. I mean, any of those guys, they're all good fights.
We're talking about two of the stacked divisions here. 126 and 147. I mean, they've got to be the top two divisions in boxing, don't you think?
Oh, without question. Yeah, without question.
I mean, you talk about who's who in boxing. Just look at those two divisions and see if you can work your way through them.
Right.
You know, good luck with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's all top competition right there, man. You know, I mean, we talked about, you know, like I said, man, Gary Russell, Leo Santa Cruz, Lee Selby, Vasily Lomachenko. You got Carl Frampton moving up. You got Rigondeaux in that mix right there. Maybe he moves up.
Yep.
It's ridiculous. And then at 147, Danny Garcia, Keith Thurman, Sean Porter, Kell Brook, Jesse Vargas, Tim Bradley, Amir Khan, you know, Chris Algieri, you know, ridiculous.
Although I believe Amir Khan, if he looks good against Canelo, you might see him stay at 154. What do you think?
It's possible. It's possible. And then we didn't even mention the heir apparent at 147, Errol Spence.
Errol Spence, yeah. And you've also got Sammy Vasquez there. I mean, hell, 147, you got a hell of a future there. You know?
Jeez. I mean, that's like murderer's row. 126 and 147, like murderer's row, man.
I mean, which do you consider the better division at this point, 126 or 147? To me, they're about equal.
I think I give the edge to 147 because there's more fighters, more quality guys. I mean, you still got Saddam Ali in there who can fight. I know he just had a loss, but, you know, he's not washed up by any point, you know.
No.
So, I mean, you got a lot of good fighters there, man. And then you got guys can come down from 154 a la Amir Khan. You got guys coming up from 140. I mean,
AKA Terrence Crawford.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
You know that's where he's headed. You know where he's headed.
Exactly. You know, and if Top Rank had their way, by the way, it would be Crawford and Bradley next.
That is doable. That, I think, would be doable.
But apparently they don't want to fight each other because they consider themselves best friends.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, you know what? That's not going to happen.
I mean, don't you have to – look, I understand being friends with somebody, but when you're in a business like this, Eric, don't you have to put your friendship aside and, you know, make a fight?
No, I disagree. I disagree wholeheartedly. I mean, look, if you're friends, the best thing you can do is give the guy a payday. So go ahead and fight him and give him a payday. That's what friends do, give each other money, you know.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Make a fight, you know, and hell – you know, because you're friends, it could turn out not in the same level because these two, only one can do this, but this could turn out to be like a Gotti Ward type trilogy. I mean, they weren't friends when it started, but by the time it ended, the two of them were best friends, and Mickey Ward gave the eulogy at Arturo Gotti's funeral. So, if Tim Bradley and Terrence Crawford are friends, why don't you make a fight with each other? That way you guys can make money together. And everybody's talking about Terrence Crawford making his pay-per-view debut. Who would be better to do it against a guy that's already been on several pay-per-views?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's why Pacquiao, it should have been Pacquiao and Crawford, Saturday versus Pacquiao and Bradley.
I totally agree. I've always agreed with that,
Let's talk about that here. Let's move forward and talk about Pacquiao and Bradley. It wasn't the headline fight this weekend, and for good reason. We had seen the fight two other times before. Now we've seen it three times, the same fight every time we watch it.
By the way, it's 3-0 Pacquiao, not 2-1 like it says in the script.
Right. Manny Pacquiao won the rubber match on Saturday, and he didn't look bad doing it. He actually looked good at times. Better than I thought he would look. Bradley looked good in spots, but Pacquiao is just one of those fighters that I think has his number. The third time they fought, the third time Pacquiao has won, no real surprises here. Bradley was floored twice in this fight. That first knockdown looked like more of an off-balance shot, but that second knockdown caught him flush. Bradley was actually caught, and he fell backwards, actually doing a rollover, a back roll. The fight ended in a unanimous decision with all three scores 116-110. Ringside Reporter also had the fight 116-110 for Pac-Man. you know, all right, now, and here's, you know, here's my criticism of Pacquiao here, is that Pacquiao looked okay, but he lacked the footwork that we're used to. I think he definitely, you know, showed that he's not the same fighter that he once was, and Father Time has definitely taken a toll. I really hope he sticks to it and says this is the, you know, and sticks to it that this is his last fight. At the press conference, I know he said he was 50-50, but that he was going to go home and run for Senate. He promised his family, the people, everything like that.
I normally don't believe fighters, but in this case, I do. I mean, what is going to be – look, most fighters, when they're done fighting, they don't have anything to fall back on. But, I mean, Manny Pacquiao is going from being an 8-time world champion to having a powerful position in his own country. I mean, and a responsible position. And if he does well, I mean, we're looking at a future world leader. I mean, what could be more irresistible than that? You're going from the boxing ring and all the fame and fortune that you get, and then the next thing you know, you're able to wield your own power because you're eventually running your own country. I mean, how many boxers can fall back on that kind of, you know?
Right.
You know?
Right, exactly.
I agree with Pacquiao, and I normally don't agree when boxers say they're going to retire because 9 times out of 10 you can't believe them. But Manny has never been one, as far as I can remember, and he's fought in this country for 15 years. He's never been one to lie to the media or make up things. I mean, him and Mayweather had that back and forth for 5 or 6 years, but, you know, Manny Pacquiao didn't come right out and lie to the public. You know, he's never said something that he didn't mean. Fighters say a lot of things when they're hyping up fights, but when Manny says something, you can normally believe it, unlike Mayweather and several other boxers that we can talk about.
Yeah, and that was another key for the promotion of this fight. You notice that they didn't really bill it as Pacquiao's last fight or his going away party or whatever. It was one of those things because Arum said that he wasn't 100% sure that was the case, and they couldn't really bill it because, you know, if he comes back 6 months later, he's going to look like an idiot, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought Pacquiao looked a little slower, didn't move as much. You know, was he still able to take care of Bradley? Yeah, he did. But he's definitely not the same fighter. So there's really no point in going on. If anybody out there thought it was like this scintillating performance by Pacquiao and that he looks like the Pacquiao of old, do me a favor. Go watch this fight and then go watch the De La Hoya fight. Go watch him and De La Hoya and then you watch this fight. You tell me that's Pacquiao of old.
Well, we have a saying in boxing that we use all the time, Eric, and it applies here. And it's called styles make fights. There are certain fighters when they're in the ring with a kind of fighter, they're always going to look good. And Timothy Bradley, God bless him, I love him. He's a great fighter. He's got nothing to be ashamed of. But let's face it, he's been in the ring for 36 rounds with Manny Pacquiao, and never legitimately did any damage to him, never legitimately beat him. Manny Pacquiao just has Timothy Bradley's number, and as long as Bradley fights other people that don't have the style of a Manny Pacquiao, Timothy Bradley's going to do just fine. But Manny Pacquiao, plain and simple, had his number.
Let's talk about Bradley for a second, because I thought he fought horrible that night on
Saturday. He did. Teddy Atlas couldn't do anything about this because Teddy Atlas can't get in the ring.
Right, right. You know, I thought mentally he just checked out of that fight. I mean, I thought that he showed way too much respect for Pacquiao during the fight. Every round they're tagging hands. You know, afterwards they're talking about breakfast and a Bible study or something like that.
Yeah, they actually did meet for breakfast on Sunday. You know, I couldn't believe it. Max is trying to do the post-fight interview, and they're making plans to meet at the Mandalay Bay at 11 o'clock in the morning for breakfast. I mean, come on. Are you serious?
Yeah, right? You know? I mean, it's just ridiculous, you know? I mean, I don't know what the deal was. I don't know. He just, like I said, and after that second, I think it was after that first or second knockdown, you watched him go back to the corner, and he almost looked like just like a baby or something. Like he was just, he was like kind of mad about it, and instead, and you could tell he just, you couldn't talk to him. You know, it was like when he walked back there, and he just looked so discouraged that there was nothing Atlas could say, there was nothing anybody could say. He just checked out of that fight.
Yeah. And I love the reaction after the fight when Max was finally able to do the interview. Tim goes, I want to see the knockdowns, you know, and they showed him the knockdowns, and he goes, the first one, that wasn't a knockdown. And then the second one goes, he goes, ooh, man, he really got me with that one. You know, it's like,
right.
Are you serious?
Yeah, like,
are you
seriously, dude?
Are you sure? You
what,
lost
you, like,
the fight?
In awe of him or something? It was like he was in awe of him or something like that.
Yeah.
Dude,
it's like,
you just go with that. After three fights, and you're like, it was like he was in total awe of this guy. I remember that when he was doing it. I was like, man, you know what? This guy deserved to lose, man. You got to go in there, you know. It's almost like he didn't want to hurt him. I don't know what his deal was. He weren't going to hurt him anyway, but it's like, you know, I don't know. Like he was too friendly with the guy. I don't know, man. It was just,
yeah, and then this morning I read in the Los Angeles Times, thank you, Lance Pugmire, he said in his interview that he gave to Pugmire, I guess, after the fight, but he published it today, because we're recording on Monday for those that listen to the podcast. He said today, well, I'm probably going to get rid of Teddy Atlas because he wants me to go to New York and I want to do my training in California. If you wanted to do all your training in California, then why did you hire Teddy Atlas in the first place? Teddy Atlas is a New York guy.
Right, and that's a great strategy, Tim, by the way. So you work with Atlas for two fights and then you get rid of him. Then you got to work with another trainer, you know, who's got to learn all your ins and outs, and then, you know, you got to work with each other. You got to work with people for some amount of time here for them to get your rhythm and get everything there and teach them new things and for you to, you know, develop. And he's not giving that any time. And if he gets rid of Atlas, it's like, you know, you got rid of your other trainer. You're going to get
Joel
rid of
Diaz.
Yeah, Joel Diaz, who was an excellent trainer. Then now you're going to get rid of, you know, Atlas or whatever, because he lost the Pacquiao fight, and make no mistake, it's because he lost the Pacquiao fight, because if he would have won, and he would have won handily, this wouldn't even be talked about. He wouldn't be talking about getting rid of Atlas.
Eric, boxing is so ridiculous. What do you bet in a few weeks, the next time we talk about Tim Bradley, that we find out that Tim Bradley is now in the wild card gym and working with Freddie Roach?
Right, right. You know, yeah, exactly.
I mean,
because, like I said, man, I mean, if he would have won yesterday, and you can't blame Atlas for that loss. You can blame Tim Bradley for being soft for that loss.
It all goes on Tim Bradley. Teddy Atlas didn't make any mistakes here.
No.
I mean, we've done several podcasts where we picked on corners and we picked on trainers for the way that they've conducted themselves. And believe me, Teddy Atlas has his detractors, you know, people that don't like him. But Teddy Atlas didn't do anything wrong in this fight. It
was
all Tim Bradley
giving him absolutely 100% correct information.
Yeah.
Don't get in firefights. Don't lose your cool. When you lose your composure, you're losing the round. He won. He was winning 2 minutes of that one round.
I know he
got clipped or whatever, and then he just went back to fighting and completely just melted down the round.
Yeah.
You know, that's not Atlas's fault. That's your fault. He's giving you the proper instruction. You're failing to execute. That's your fault.
Yeah. Absolutely. Tim, wake up, smell the coffee, keep Teddy, and move on with your career. And get over this worship of Manny Pacquiao. He's a hell of a fighter, had a wonderful career. He's going to wind up in the Boxing Hall of Fame, but move on.
Yeah, he's not your friend for that 36 minutes in there. You know what I mean? It's like, put that aside. And try to take his head off, you know.
That's why I'm wondering if him and Terrence Crawford are really friends. Is he going to do the same thing if he fights Crawford?
Well, clearly he will. Clearly he will. You know.
And no offense to Manny Pacquiao, but Terrence Crawford can rip your head off.
Right.
You know. I mean, I don't see Terence Crawford being in there with his friend and not trying to knock his head off and knock him out.
Could you picture, say, like Ruslan Provodnikov or Terence? Could you picture Terence Crawford giving Pacquiao that reaction after the fight?
When
showing him a knockdown like that?
Absolutely not.
Right?
You know?
Right? Could you picture like Provodnikov doing that?
No.
Can't picture
it. No, absolutely not.
Let me tell you what. Tim Bradley's soft, and he showed it in that fight. He's a soft fighter. He's soft.
And you know, you have to wonder about Bradley. If he's capable of being soft, does he really want to fight?
Nope.
You have to ask that question. Do you really want to continue fighting?
He's not acting like a fighter, I tell you that. He's not acting like a fighter. You know, you lose a fight and you're blaming everybody else. No, you're not acting like a fighter, you know. And like I said, I mean, I say he's blaming Teddy Atlas because he's talking about getting rid of Teddy Atlas. Listen, Atlas didn't do this. Atlas, this is not Atlas. This does not fall on Atlas. This falls squarely on you. And if, again, man, if they would have won the fight, there'd be no talk of Atlas gone the next day.
No.
None.
Are you kidding? If they would have won this fight, they would have already been. They would have already started the discussion with Bradley fighting Crawford. I can almost guarantee that.
Right. Or something. He would have been fighting another big name for pay per view money and all this other stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know. And you know what? I'm glad that Manny's going to retire because Freddie Roach's ridiculous idea of him fighting Canelo. Are you serious?
Well,
you know?
I'm not even saying that. I mean, the way it is now, yeah, that's a ridiculous idea.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, maybe not. But right now, yeah, that's a ridiculous idea.
Yeah. Amir Khan is going to show you what a 147-pounder looks like, you know, on May 7th.
Tell you what, man, Amir Khan is looking diesel these days, man. I'm seeing pictures of him. He's working out and everything like that, up in weight. He looks big, man.
Yeah. I'm fascinated with that fight. I don't know who I'm going to pick, but I'm definitely fascinated with the way that this is going to turn out. I mean, could Amir Khan completely upset the apple cart? Everybody's talking about Canelo fighting Triple G. Well, what happens if Amir Khan goes in there on May 7th and beats Canelo? I mean, I don't know. I think Oscar and a few people are jumping way ahead of the game here, don't you think?
Yeah, it's I tell you what, man. It's I think it's going to be interesting, man. I tell you, I think that Khan fight is going to be interesting. It's either going to go like everybody thinks it's going to go, with Canelo knocking him out within six rounds.
Right.
Or, you know, because I know Khan can hit, man. Khan's got some power, too.
Yeah, and the reason why I'm fascinated is, and I know we're talking about Khan Canelo here, and I know that wasn't planned, but one of the reasons why I'm fascinated by this whole thing is for two reasons. One, I've never been impressed with Canelo's trainers, and number two, Khan has the speed element that that Canelo never can deal with. I mean, look at the way he froze up against Mayweather. I could see Canelo doing the same thing against Khan. I mean, Khan presents a lot of the same issues, not as highly skilled as Mayweather presented.
Who is Canelo's trainer?
They're Spanish brothers. I forget what their names are, but
I'd like to see him hook up with Nacho Bernstein.
Yeah.
I think that would be a good mix, man.
Because I have never been impressed with his corner, you know.
No, Nacho's a very good trainer, man. Nacho's a very good trainer.
Yeah. I've worried about that in several Canelo fights, because whenever Canelo fights people lately, the other guy always has a top trainer in the corner, and these guys look like amateurs, but yet they've been with him his entire career.
Right.
I think the trainer difference in one of these fights is eventually going to show up.
Yeah, it has to. It will. It will.
So I do give Amir Khan a hell of a shot here.
I do too. Absolutely, man. He's a live dog for sure, man.
Yeah.
You know what I noticed at the Pacquiao fight, though, before we move off of that? What I noticed at the Pacquiao fight Well, there's a ton of Hollywood celebrities always at every Pacquiao fight. There
right?
was none there this time. I mean, absolutely zero. When they were flashing the crowd and, you know, introducing, you know, like HBO always does on a pay-per-view or whatever, oh, and such
right.
and such is here, such and such is here. They
right.
were all fighters.
Yeah.
Every
one
of them.
And you know another thing I've noticed? Michael Buffer chose to go to England instead of being in Las Vegas.
That's,
how about that?
You know what? That's what I was going to mention, too. That's how you know it wasn't a mark. Lupe Contreras is announcing your pay-per-view, son. That's where you are. All right? That's where you are, son. Lupe Contreras. All right? Michael Buffer's in the UK and out to Anthony Joshua, and you're stuck with Lupe. You couldn't even get Jimmy Lennon, son, because he can't even work on your network.
Well, no, Jimmy Lennon Jr. used to work on HBO all the time, but I found that fascinating. When I turned the TV on Saturday afternoon to watch the Joshua fight, when I realized that Michael Buffer was there, I'm thinking to myself, before the pay-per-view even starts, well, if Michael Buffer's in the UK, who is going to do the Las Vegas? And when I turn on the pay-per-view and I discovered it's Lupe Contreras, and nothing against Lupe, he's a decent ring announcer.
Yeah,
he's not
the money man, you know, he's not the two big guys, you know, he's not Lennon and Buffer.
Yeah.
They couldn't even get Bruce Buffer from the UFC to announce the fight, man. Come on.
But I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, when you got Lupe Contreras on a pay-per-view, what does that say about your pay-per-view?
It tells you and I are suckers. That's what it says.
That's well,
what
you
it
know
says.
What?
We are suckers. We are two degenerate suckers
to
pay $70 for this.
Hey, I don't mind because, you know, we got to see a Hall of Famer go out on top.
Yeah, you don't mind because you're rolling in dough.
Driving
around in Lamborghinis and Benzes and stuff like that. The rest of us are working people, son. That's the way it goes.
Yeah, if I was rolling in dough, my life would be a whole lot different than what it actually is.
Let's talk about this. Let's say that fight was worth $10. Let's talk about this $60 undercard here.
Okay.
Gilberto Ramirez looked pretty good. He looked actually really good defeating King Arthur Abraham. Abraham, of course, has been around the game for a long time. Tight defense. Abraham came out with his patented tight defense, that kind of like that turtle, that peekaboo type style. He's got a peekaboo defense, not really a peekaboo style. You always think of like Mike Tyson and the quick movement and everything like that. Not necessarily Arthur Abraham. He just kind of has his guards up, and it's kind of hard to penetrate. But I thought Ramirez did a good job. Hurt him quite a few times in that fight. All scores 120 to 108 from Ramirez. He looks like he becomes the first Mexican to win a super middleweight title for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, I found that to be amazing that he's the first Latino fighter in history to win a title in that division. I'm like,
well, they're not
wow.
that heavy. I mean, most of the Latino fighters you think about are, you know, featherweights and,
yeah,
you know,
right.
welterweights
right.
and stuff. You don't see them really in the middleweights, you know.
Right.
I mean, even
right.
Canelo, who's a big guy, is not, you know.
Right, right.
He ain't fighting anyone.
But, you know, I mean, Ramirez, I think, has a bright future. And, hell, if the whole PBC thing could get settled, I'd love to see Ramirez fight people like James DeGale and Body Jack.
Wait, is that accurate? The first Mexican to win a super middleweight title? What about Chavez Jr.?
He was
middleweight.
He was middleweight.
He never won at 168, did he?
That's right. Yeah,
that's right. Because he was set to fight Badu Jack.
Yeah,
and then he got injured or whatever. He got hit by
he pulled out
some cocaine or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah,
he has heel injury. Yeah, he spilled a bunch of coke.
But no, that was accurate. They made a big deal.
I forgot about that. Yeah, because I'm like, wait a minute, Chavez Jr. I'm like, oh, that's right.
No,
that's right. Unbeaten two-time Mexican Olympian featherweight Oscar Valdez. He looked impressive, man. And this, I was surprised that he took apart Gradovich like this. He fought Evany Gradovich in four rounds, and Valdez just took him apart, man. Just took him to school. I expected a lot more out of Gradovich. I've seen him fight a lot of times before. And, man, the way he dismantled him, that was fierce, man.
Yes, I heard you. I can't when I'm recording, Mom. Sorry, Eric.
No, that's okay.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. What were you saying?
We were talking about the Evgeny Gradovich and Oscar Valdez fight. I was surprised about how Valdez took the part like that.
It looks like Gradovich is done, man.
It looked like it, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it sure did, man, because, he took a beating in that fight.
You know, I was really surprised. I haven't seen him fight in a while, and he looks like he's done, and he's only 29 years old.
Yeah, he didn't look good, man, for sure. But Valdez looks really good.
Yeah.
And then we had Jose Ramirez, and then he beat Manny Perez over 10 rounds.
All I can say about that is Ramirez deserved the victory. He's got a bright future, but in the future, don't put him in against guys like Manny Perez. I mean, if you're going to build this guy up, give him somebody else to fight. You don't need to fight somebody that now has 12 losses.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you're 17-0. The guy has 12 losses. The guy he's fighting, a veteran guy. You know, and but he took him over the 10 rounds, so that was good. I mean, he got some work in, but you want to see him a little bit more, you know, get pushed a little more.
Not on a pay-per-view, Eric.
If you want to put him in
against a guy like this, put it on True TV or something. Don't open your pay-per-view card with this.
That's why I said we're suckers, man. We're suckers.
Well, hey, that's all right. I'm going to be a sucker May 7th.
Yeah, right. All right, so let's look ahead to this weekend, man. April 15th, Friday, right? That's Friday?
Yeah, Friday, tax day.
That's right. Look at that.
Yeah.
Nikolai Potapov versus Stephen Young, 10 rounds, bantamweights. This will be on Showtime. And then
this is a Showbox card.
Yeah. So, and then Yudi Bernardo versus Mason Menard, 8 rounds, lightweights. And then Alexei Zubov versus Konstantin Bejanaru, 8 rounds, mm-hmm. cruiserweights.
And then on the 16th,
still on Friday here, on Australia TV, Robbie's favorite network, Jesus Soto Carras versus Yoshiro Kamagai, 10 rounds, junior middleweights. That should be a pretty good one.
You know, I wish that was on regular TV. That has the potential to be fight of the year.
Right.
Or, you know.
That's going to be a good one, man.
I'm very disappointed in Oscar that he stuck this on an internet channel. This is a good fight.
Oscar sticks everything on the internet channels. I mean, he does. I mean, all of it. I mean, he really does. I mean, look at his nephew. Look how he's treating his nephew like that, man.
Yeah.
Put him on TV.
Look, Al Heyman didn't take all the TV networks. He could make a deal with somebody. Come on, Oscar.
Right. Come on, Oscar. Get it together over there, Golden Boy. All right. So April 16th, Saturday, my man. From New York, PBC on NBC, the heir apparent, Errol Spence Jr., Chris Algieri.
What a hell of a fight that's going to be. Yep.
10 rounds, welterweights. And then Krzysztof Glowacki versus Steve Cunningham, 12 rounds for Glowacki's cruiserweight title.
You know what? We're going to find an awful lot out about the heir apparent because, in my opinion, this is the first legitimate opponent he's had, and this is a good step up for him. We're going to find out just how special he really is, because Algieri is not going to lay down, especially with John David Jackson in the corner. This is going to be a good fight.
Chris Algieri's been talking an awful lot before this fight, man, saying that he's got the experience, he's the better guy, he should be favored, blah, blah, blah.
Well, one of the reasons why he's saying that is because, you know, you can look back. He's fought Amir Khan, he's fought Pacquiao, he's fought Baratnikov, Errol Spence.
And he lost three of them.
Yeah. He did. But
he lost
they
all
gave
three
him,
of them. They gave him the Baratnikov decision.
Yeah.
That was a gift. They wrapped it up for him.
Yeah.
But let me tell you what, Chris Algieri is going to get pounded in this
fight. Saying all that, Earl's going to show how special he is, and you know he's going to move on. I think Glowacki will end the career of Steve Cunningham.
No joke.
Yeah,
he's
he proved what he could do against Marco Hook. you know, I think Glowacki is going to end the career of USS Steve Cunningham.
I think so, too. I think Glowacki, and I think Errol Spence is going to walk right through Chris Algieri like Manny Pacquiao walked through Chris Algieri. Chris Algieri, look, man, here's the deal. All right, when you're talking about boxers, Errol Spence is there because he's got a winning record. All right? Because he's undefeated, he's winning, he's up and coming, he doesn't lose. Former Olympian. Chris Algieri has made his name off of being a loser. Like it or not, that's the way it is. He really has. Did you hear, it's very true, did you hear of Chris Algieri prior to the Provodnikov fight?
Yes, I did.
Unless you follow kickboxing, all right, you didn't hear about Chris Algieri. You're lying to me now, all right? He lost against Provodnikov, and everybody knows he lost that fight.
Yes,
HBO, what did HBO have, 117 to 109 or something crazy?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it was ridiculous, you know? So he clearly lost that fight. They gave him the fight.
Provodnikov should have got that Pacquiao fight.
Yeah.
You know?
And instead, Chris Algieri goes over there and rolls over six times. Six times. He spent more time on the canvas than his shoes did, okay? He rolled over six times in that fight.
That's one of the reasons why Provodnikov is now working with Al Haymon, folks, is he didn't get that Pacquiao fight.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And so he got rolled over, six times in that fight. And then he goes and fights Amir Khan and loses that fight, too. He's on a three-fight losing streak, and he's talking about how good he is. Are you serious?
Well, Earl's going to make it four, you know?
Right. And then he'll be clamoring for his next big payday. You know, really? This guy, you should hear this guy talk in the interviews and stuff. Like, he's just going to roll over Errol Spence. He's just going to smash Errol Spence. Son, you're going to get crushed. This ain't even going to be close. Have you thought that Pacquiao fight was a blowout? Man, come on, man.
Hey, Earl could end this in the first round, and that would be bad for NBC, but, you know.
Yeah, I think, I wouldn't be shocked to see it go the distance, but I wouldn't be shocked to see Errol end it early. I really wouldn't. I mean, I think he's going to put him away big, man. And then let's talk about the one later on that night on Showtime. Showtime Championship Boxing from Connecticut, from Mash and Tucket.
Yeah, the Indian casino there.
That's right. Friend of the show, Gary Russell. Versus Patrick Hyland, 12 rounds for Russell's WBC featherweight title. And then Jose Pedraza versus Stephen Smith for Pedraza's IBF junior lightweight title. Let me tell you what, let me start with Pedraza real quick, man. Pedraza was real lucky to get out of Cincinnati with that title because I thought he lost that fight, man.
Everybody
sitting around me thought he lost that fight. He was real lucky to leave Cincinnati with that IBF title, man, that's for sure.
Yes.
But be that as it may, he should have his way with Stephen Smith, and he should be able to retain that title.
By the way, Stephen Smith is another UK fighter going for a world title.
And we could be starting with the number 13 next week.
I don't think so, but anything's possible these days.
Anything's possible, man. And then Hurdle hijack the title and then keep it up there.
And then Gary Russell should not have any issue with Patrick Hyland, I don't believe.
Shouldn't have any issues at all with Patrick Hyland. In fact, I would like to see Gary Russell start fighting... I want to see him fight like a Santa Cruz or somebody like that, man. There's too much competition in that division.
Well, I would actually like to see Gary Russell rematch with Lomachenko.
I would, too. I mean, like I said, there's too much competition in that division for you guys to be fighting the guys that you're fighting, for all the top guys to be fighting the guys that they're fighting. You know what I mean? Too much competition for that. You know, let's find out who the best is. Let's... see what's going on. Also, too, Chad Dawson is on that undercard against Cornelius White, 10 rounds.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
are you serious?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Chad Dawson, guaranteed he probably won't be on TV.
That might be on Show Extreme if they have a card.
Ah, that's right. Man, I hope they do. They didn't say anything, but yeah, I hope they do.
Yeah.
I'd like to see where Chad Dawson is.
I think Chad Dawson's a big potato that is waiting for the fork to be stuck in him. But,
And then fights from San Juan also on Saturday. Robert's favorite station, Unimas. Felix Verdejo going to have his tune-up fight against Jose Luis Rodriguez, 10 rounds, lightweights.
Yeah, and if he's successful, his next date is already set, June 11th in the Garden.
Right.
And no opponent has been named yet, although there's several names being kicked around.
Yeah, so. Well, that's on the Lomachenko. He's going to be on the Lomachenko undercard against with Rocky Martinez. So
that's correct.
That's
yeah.
Man, that's going to be a good fight. That's going to be a real good fight. On BN Sports, if you get that in Espanol, Josh Warrington versus Hisashi Amagasa, 12 rounds featherweights, and then Stuart Hall versus Rodrigo Guerrero, 12 rounds for the IBF bantamweight eliminator. Also, too, on CBSSports.net on Saturday from Las Vegas, Steve Claggett versus our man Chris Van Heerden, 10 rounds welterweight. So it'll be interesting to see what Chris Van Heerden has after that beating he took from Errol Spence. So
That is the debut of Jim Ross on CBS Sports Network.
Oh, okay. Very cool. And then get this one. This will be interesting for you. From Guadalupe, Mexico. Adrian Estrella, now this is going to be televised, so stream it or go YouTube it. Adrian Estrella versus Roberts Boy, DeMarcus, Chop Chop Corley, 10 rounds, junior welterweight.
Oh, my God.
Right?
Some people don't know how to retire.
And from the Philippines also that night, another one that's not going to be televised, McJoe Arroyo versus Jerwin Anacajas, 12 rounds for Arroyo's title. Why is that interesting? Because I believe that Arroyo, let me see here, is on one of these undercards here. They're fighting the same. His brother is fighting the same day.
Yeah.
Let me find it here. But I don't know if it's going to be televised. I thought he was. I don't know. He was supposed to be. I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. Don't worry about it.
It's not a big deal. Nobody knows his brother anyway. Nobody barely
that's
knows
right.
him.
Yeah.
All right. So there you go. And that's the fights coming up.
Right.
So some good fights this weekend.
Yeah.
Good fights. I think there's some predictable fights, but I think they're good fights nonetheless. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to some showcases. Absolutely. All right, let's move along to the history lesson. We're going all the way back deep. Well, not that deep. April 4th, 2009. Go figure that one out. That's our history lesson. 2009. Edwin Valero versus Antonio Petalua for the vacant. My son just walked in the room and raised his hand because I said Antonio. And that's
there you go.
He goes all crazy. Right. Every time we say Antonio or there's a boxer on TV named Antonio, hey, that's my name, you know.
Yeah, for that's
the
right.
WBC lightweight title that was vacant. You remember Edwin Valero, right?
Try that again, Eric.
You remember Edwin Valero?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Edwin Valero, this was Edwin Valero's first shot at the lightweight championship. He had been dominant in the featherweight and super featherweight categories, but this was a pretty big move up, man. From featherweight to lightweight, that's a pretty big jump, man. Or it's super featherweight, it's lightweight. That's a good jump. Valero was from Venezuela. He was a powerful southpaw fighter. He ended up with a record at the end of his career with a record of 27-0 with 27 knockouts. Just to let you know how powerful he was relentless. So how could you... You know, how would he fare at a heavier weight? Typically, the rule of thumb is that when you move up, you lose the power. Definitely not the case with Valero.
Well, sometimes your power follows you.
Yeah. The fight started with Valero boxing very well, which everyone knew he had the ability to do. But for the most part, he was more of a slugging style. Valero boxed very well and frustrated Petalua in the first round. Petalua didn't throw many punches. You could tell he was very leery of Valero's power in that first round. And for good reason. Just seconds into the second round, Valero caught Petalua with a vicious shot that sent him down. Petalua beat the count, but you could see he was real staggered, man. He just was not he wasn't all there. Petalua beat the count. Valero swarmed on him and was able to finish him, giving him the lightweight title. Now, why is this fight important? This fight is important because Valero was one of the all-time, may have been one of the all-time greats. And he's still considered by many to be one of the all-time greats, whether, you know, more in the case of the featherweights and super featherweights than lightweight, because he didn't have a lot of fights at lightweight. He only had two more after that. But a lot of personal issues derailed that for Edwin Valero. He was convicted on many assault charges and everything like that in 2009. And unfortunately, in 2010, he committed suicide after his wife was found dead in a hotel room. Valero allegedly admitted to murdering his wife. He was taken in custody by the police and was found dead in his cell the next day. He had hung himself. A tough history lesson here, man, because Edwin Valero is one of those guys you always wonder about. Edwin Valero ended his career with 27-0.
I didn't realize that his story ended up like that. Okay.
Yeah. He was 27-0 with 27 knockouts, and you always have stories like this of talent that never really materialized, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
You know, he won titles and everything. That's not what I'm talking about. But this guy could have went on to be one of the greatest in history when it was all said and done.
Yep.
Nobody was able to stand up to this guy's power. You know, whenever I think of this, I think of like guys like Edwin Valero. You think of guys like Tony Ayala, who we've always said it, man. I thought my dad and I both have thought he would have went up and he would have beat Marvin Hagler at 160. Never got the opportunity. You know, he was such a good fighter, and mm-hmm. Edwin Valero the same way. And I hate stories like this where you got a guy who, you know, who has so much potential. And you could see the track record. You could see it in the news. You know, when he's being booked on assault charges.
But the problem with these stories, Eric, is they normally wind up either like Edwin Valero or like Ayala, where they can't stay out of trouble.
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely. Mike Tyson is another example of. I mean, the guy you know who's considered, you know, could possibly be the best heavyweight ever. I mean, honestly, and as much trouble as he was in,
yeah.
I mean, man, I mean, when he was, you know, 19, what was he, how old was he when he won that title, 21?
20 or 21.
Yeah, I think he was 20 years old when he won the title.
Yeah.
He was just freakish. I mean, that's just crazy skill, you know, and all this stuff comes to him, you know, and it's just sad, man.
Yeah.
So, Edwin Valero, man, 27-0, 27 knockouts. One of the greats, April 4th, 2009, solidified himself in history by winning the WBC lightweight title, man.
And I guarantee you next week we have a much better history lesson for you all.
A good ending. A happy ending, too. A happy ending because neither guy really gets hurt. So, yeah.
That's right.
That's right. And both guys, you know, go on to become millionaires. So, yeah.
There you go. Yeah. All right.
Let's move along to our news and rumors here. The big news, Fury and Klitschko, the rematch is finally set July 9th in Manchester Arena. Do you give Klitschko any shot here?
After what I've seen in November, you have to give him a shot, but my answer is no.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he has, he didn't look good against Fury that first fight. There's nothing to me to suggest. And, you know, going back... and we talked about this after that Fury fight, that first Fury fight. He didn't look good against Brian Jennings either.
But Eric, I'm going to sound like a hypocrite here. I don't give Tyson Fury a very long title reign because you've indicated to me that the way we've seen him fight in November is the way that he fights all the time.
All the time, yeah.
And with the heavyweight division, one of the things you need in the heavyweight division is power. I don't see Tyson Fury having a very long title reign.
I think Tyson Fury is one of those guys, though. Well, I mean, you know, I think he's one of those guys, though, that you look at him and I think people see him and say, you know, that guy is so beatable. And then you get in there and it's a different story.
Well,
that's the case here, you know.
Well, that's what I used to say about Joe Calzaghe. Remember how Joe Calzaghe always used to look so beatable?
And then when
you stepped in the ring with him, it's like. But Joe Calzaghe's defense, he actually had knockout power. Where Tyson Fury, you know, yeah, he's 25-0 with 18 knockouts, but. They must have been soft cupcakes, because I don't see him hurting Klitschko unless Klitschko is just completely washed up like we think he is.
Yeah,
but
I think that's where it is.
You know,
like I said, I mean, his fight against Brian Jennings, everybody thought Brian Jennings was like, wow, this is the next guy, man. I mean, he gave Klitschko a really good fight, and then watching him against, like, say, Louis Ortiz, you know.
Are you saying that you think Tyson is going to hold the title a lot longer than we think?
I think so, because he's going to fight Klitschko. Who knows who he's going to fight next? I don't think he's going to fight anybody dangerous. And that seems to be the trend here in boxing. I don't see anybody fighting anybody dangerous, with the exception of Amir Khan and Canelo. That's a very dangerous fight.
And that's bad for the sport, Eric.
I think so, too.
look at what you just said. He's not going to fight anybody dangerous.
No.
You know, that's bad for the sport.
I agree.
We're talking about the supposed undisputed, not undisputed, but lineal heavyweight champion, pretty much, that has more of the belt, and you're not going to fight anybody worthwhile. I don't know. I think Tyson will win this fight, but I think the first time he steps in the ring with anybody that can hurt him, I think his reign is over. And by the way, folks, I don't want to hear that he's 6'9". I watch NBA basketball, and Tyson Fury is not 6'9". I mean, you could clearly see it. Klitschko's like 6'6", and him and Fury look like they were the same size. If there's a 3-inch height advantage, you would notice it.
Right.
And you didn't notice it.
Right. It's like that. It's like a professional wrestling 6'9", you know.
Yeah.
300 pounds.
I mean, Gilberto Ramirez had a 5.5 height advantage over Arthur Abraham, and the only reason why it didn't look like it was a 5.5 height advantage is because Ramirez kept bending down. I wish Emmanuel Stewart was still alive because he would correct that.
That drove me nuts in that fight, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that drove me nuts. And you were 100% right. And I think they even alluded to it on the telecast that Manny Stewart would have really did wonders with that guy.
Yeah. No, maybe I'm wrong here, but Tyson wins the Klitschko rematch. But beyond that, unless he's put in with soft touches,
yeah.
I don't see him holding the title very long.
Well, the big fight, obviously, the big fight is going to be him and Joshua. That's the big fight.
And Anthony Joshua, well, after what I saw on Saturday, would put Tyson to sleep.
I'm not 100% sure about that because Tyson does have the ability to box fairly well. I mean, he's a really good boxer.
Well, it also looks like Joshua is capable of moving, too.
Well, he's a gold medalist boxer, so yeah,
I mean,
he's definitely a great boxer. I just wouldn't be so quick to dismiss Fury against Joshua for sure.
No, I'm not dismissing. Look, it's going to be a couple of years before that happens. We know that,
right?
But I just don't see Tyson holding the titles for a long period of time. I may be wrong, and I don't mind admitting that. But I can only go from the two fights I've seen him in.
Yeah, and I think, like I said, man, Joshua still's got a long way to go, I think.
Of course he does.
But I tell you, when Joshua's there and he hits on all cylinders, once he gets a few fights under his belts against some quality fighters, and that's what they need to do is feed him some quality fighters, he is going to be the best heavyweight maybe ever.
But Eddie Hearn's going to protect his investment like gold, and he's not going to do that. And we're dealing with a very, very bad cycle in boxing where fighters get titles and then they're protected, and that shouldn't be allowed.
Right, I agree. I agree. There's a lot of that going on lately, for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about other.
Let's go, champ. Let's talk about Shannon Briggs. Shannon Briggs went to England to find a fight with David Hay, and it looks like he may have done just that. So these two clowns are at the weigh-in. They're at the Joshua and Martin weigh-in, okay? Briggs confronts David Hay over there, and he lightly slapped him in the face. I can't even call it a slap. He, kind of pushed his face, touched it, I can't even describe it. It's just like a light brush of his face, It wasn't even a slap, get out of here kind of thing, you would do, It was, and he made fun of his hair and stuff like that. And by the way, if you haven't seen David Hay lately, his hairstyle makes him look homeless. This is one, maybe fairly close, as David Hay wasn't too pleased about this. And Briggs has actually been put on David Hay's next undercard for David Hay's next fight. So the two, like I said, if Briggs wins and Hay wins, then that fight is definitely going to get set up.
Well, love him or hate him, you got to love the way Shannon Briggs keeps his career going.
Let's go, champ.
I mean, he shows up everywhere and agonizes, and carries on and, and makes a big scene out of himself, and then the next thing you know, he gets what he wants. I mean, I don't like the way he's doing it, but hey, it's working, so we're going to see more of this.
It's funny because David Haye actually gave an interview after the fact, and he said, you know, he used to watch him. He said he watched him stalk Klitschko all around the world. You know, everywhere Klitschko goes, there you see Shannon Briggs. Let's go, champ. Let's go, champ. You know, he's on a boat. You know, he's on a boat or whatever, and it's, you know, he's in the water. Shannon Briggs rents a boat, and he goes, knocks him off his little paddleboard or whatever he was doing.
Right, right.
You know, he goes in a restaurant, causes a big scene, you know. And David Haye was talking about all this, and David Haye was like, you know, it was really funny. He said, I thought it was really funny. He said, until it happens to you, then it's really annoying.
Well, you know, I think a fight between those two is actually going to be interesting because we know Shannon Briggs is in his 40s, and David Haye's not exactly a spring chicken. We're going to find out which one of them has anything left.
I think David Haye should blow out Shannon Briggs. I mean, no.
Well, I hope so. But hey, it's a fun show. I mean, look at what we just discussed about people protecting people. I
right.
mean, at least this guy is going around the world. He doesn't care where it is. I want to know how he's funding all these trips. By the way,
that's what I was going to say, man. It's like,
you know,
he's got to be on his dime, you know.
Yeah. You know? But, hey, it's fantastic. As long as it works, keep it up. Who needs a promoter when you can promote your own fights?
Right, right. And then let's talk about as I was watching the Pacquiao pay-per-view and thinking about why I spent $70 on it, the most interesting part of the Pacquiao pay-per-view was the preview for the Roberto Duran movie. They've now got a full preview of it. It's called Hands of Stone. They actually sponsored the Pacquiao-Bradley fight. It's a movie, of course, about Roberto Duran coming out this summer. It looks really good, man. And we talked about this before, but we actually got to see the preview over, you know, if you watch the fight or if you YouTube it for free. Robert De Niro, yeah, you know, you didn't have to pay $70 for the preview. Robert De Niro plays Ray Arcel, of course, Duran's trainer. And then Usher plays Sugar Ray Leonard. And
I think this is going to be a fantastic movie. It debuts in theaters August 26th. Mark it on your calendar. I think it's well worth going to see.
Yeah.
And Roberto Duran was there, by the way.
I saw him. Yeah, they introduced him and everything like that. So that was pretty cool, too. And then, hey, man, you know Robert De Niro in boxing movies, Raging Bull.
Yeah, there you go.
Never Knocked Me Down.
Yeah. Can you believe Raging Bull was 36 years ago, 1980?
I can't. How crazy is that, man?
Yeah.
How crazy is that? How old are we, man? My goodness.
Yeah. To think about that is like, wow.
It's just depressing, you know? Why do you bring up this?
Yeah.
You depress the whole podcast. I'm over there talking about happy things. I'm talking about Edwin Valero and everything like that. I'm trying to lift people's spirits
well,
up.
Well, hey, Edwin Valero, the fight was okay, but... sad ending, so...
Yeah, sad ending. Yeah, it was a good fight, man. It was a good fight. Yeah. I had power, man.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, but no, I think the Roberto Duran movie looks good. Buy your tickets now.
That's right. All right, let's move on to our train wreck of the week. Our train wreck of the week is the ESPN Top 25 Pound for Pound Greatest Ever. This is our train wreck of the week because these momos really screwed it up over here at ESPN.
And this will show you what the people in Bristol, Connecticut know about professional boxing.
Right. So they were talking to Dan Rayfield about this, and Dan Rayfield said there was like a panel that voted on it. All right. And this is what they came up with. All right. Top 25 pound for pound greatest ever. Ever. All right.
Okay.
Not Sugar Ray Robinson. Nobody liked that. Number five, Julio Cesar Chavez.
He needs to be on that list.
And we'll start with number five. There was 25 of them. We'll start with five. We'll just do the top five.
Okay.
Number five, Julio Cesar Chavez Sr., the good one.
Yeah.
Number four, Roy Jones Jr.
I don't know about that.
Number three, Bernard Hopkins.
I don't look. Legendary career, but number three all time.
Pound for pound? Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Number two, Manny Pacquiao.
Look, he won 8 world titles in I don't know how many different weight divisions, but number two all time,
Yeah. And number one, Floyd Mayweather.
Well.
Look, here's the deal. Here's the deal, man. Look, Floyd Mayweather, how many different weight classes was he in? I could even make a better case for Pacquiao being rated ahead of Floyd Mayweather.
Okay. Pacquiao was, he won 8 different world titles. And let's see. Pacquiao, didn't he start at like 108 or 112?
Yeah.
And then he went all the way through those lighter weight divisions and wound up winning title all the way up to 154.
Right.
Floyd Mayweather started at 130 and only went up to 147.
Right. How could he be the best pound for pound out there? Bernard Hopkins is the other one. He 160, 168, and 175.
Oh no, he didn't. He's never fought at 168 that I know of. I know that he's
175.
Yeah, 160 and 175. The thing about it is now the reason why you're talking about 168 is Bernard is trying to get a fight at 168,
right?
So he can claim a title at that weight class. But even if he does that, that's only 3 weight classes. Like I just said, Manny Pacquiao did at least 8.
Let's talk about Julio Cesar Chavez, who won over 100 fights in his career. You know,
yep.
I mean, I could rank him above Bernard Hopkins.
And Roy Jones.
Well, Roy Jones, this is interesting, too. Roy Jones, I mean, you think about this, won middleweight, super middleweight. What else?
Light heavyweight
And heavyweight.
Yeah.
That, to me, that's a pretty impressive pound for pound right there.
Okay.
That's pretty impressive. Manny Pacquiao, I got it, you know. I mean, I could, you know, he'll be on the top. I mean, could be on the top. What about Sugar Ray Robinson? What about Henry Armstrong? You know,
yeah.
What about those guys? I mean, because, you know, we talked about it like, you know, you take Roberto Duran.
Yeah.
I mean, in our fantasy, you know, in our fantasy fights and everything, they didn't fare very well because they're fighting, you know, obviously they're fighting, you know, guys of today, you know.
Yeah, and
but
you had.
But doesn't diminish what they did back in the day.
You had Willie Pep, too.
Right.
You know?
What about Willie Pep? Who, you know, again, guys who won titles, and if you're talking about pound for pound, the greatest ever, you got to look at guys who won multiple titles through multiple weight classes. Floyd Mayweather, you know, I'm not diminishing his career. He had a great career. He doesn't belong in the pound-for-pound list.
No.
Not in the top five. Bernard Hopkins, again, great career, doesn't belong on this list in the top five.
No.
No.
I mean, I want to know who the hell was on this panel and how much fighting they've actually watched, because their list tells me, look, they didn't even list a top heavyweight. They didn't even put Tyson or Ali or, you know, Holyfield or, you know. I mean, they just showed me with their top five list. They don't know anything about boxing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know. I mean, my God. No, Manny Pacquiao, if you're going to put anybody number one on this particular list, it would have to be Manny Pacquiao.
I would say between Roy Jones and Manny Pacquiao, man, anybody who goes from middleweight and wins all the titles in between, with the exception of the cruiserweight title, because I don't think he won that, did he?
No, he did not.
And won the heavyweight championship.
Yeah.
Man, that's a pretty tough, you know, that's a pretty tough thing. But Manny Pacquiao, I don't know how many different weight divisions. He's won eight weight divisions or something crazy like that. He's won multiple weight divisions. That's, you know.
He's had 66 fights. We'd have to go through BoxRec and actually figure out how many divisions he was actually in.
Right.
But think about that, 66 fights. And look, Julio Cesar Chavez probably did the same thing. Didn't he start out at a lighter weight?
It was like light featherweight or something. It was like, I think it was 120, 126 or 122 maybe.
Yeah, and he moved all the way up to what, 147. I thought he fought at 154, too. But,
no,
okay.
I don't believe he did. I don't believe he
all
did.
All right. So, you know, think about that. I mean, look, they don't call him what's the nickname for Chavez?
JC Superstar.
He won 110 fights, 89 consecutive. Nobody will ever top that.
Yeah, and I mean, he would probably be, you know, like I said, and then, you know, if we're ranking these guys, the rankings are wrong anyway. Because like I said, Chavez and Roy Jones need to be higher than that. Pacquiao's higher. Yeah. The two that really don't belong on here would be Bernard Hopkins and Floyd Mayweather.
Right.
And possibly even Chavez, because Chavez didn't really move up that high in weight. But then you got, you know, you talk about Sugar Ray Robinson. Where's he at? What about Roberto Duran? Where's he at? You know?
Sugar Ray Leonard, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, Thomas the Hitman Hearns.
Where's Hearns at? Hearns won multiple titles and over multiple weight classes, too. Where's he at?
Yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, where's he at?
Thomas Hearns ended his career as a cruiserweight.
I think number six was Juan Manuel Marquez. Who's running this? Who's that girl that we can't stand on the fight game? Who she was on the fight game?
Michelle Beadle.
Yeah, who's running this? Michelle Beadle?
And, you know, Michelle Beadle does work for ESPN, and they probably had
they
her
probably pulled her. I guarantee they pulled her. I guarantee.
Yeah. This is utterly stupid. Thank you, Bristol, Connecticut, for showing your stupidity. That is our train wreck of the week. Congratulations.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Couldn't disagree more with the top five. Because, like I said, I think your top five rankings are screwed up.
I would hate to see the other 20 names on this list.
Like I said, I don't understand how you can do, you know, you got guys that won four or five different weight classes not ranked at the top. I don't get that. Help me out with that.
What about Marco Antonio Barrera, Eric Morales, I mean, you're showing me that you don't know a damn thing about boxing.
Right. Unbelievable. Yeah, I think they had, let me see if I can find this real quick, because I just did the top five here, ESPN.
Yeah.
Top 25, pound for pound.
I frankly hate pound for pound list. You know, I don't know how you feel about them, Eric, but I think they're a waste of time.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. Let's see. Floyd is number one, obviously. Now they're going to have it, so you have to click through every one of them. I'm not going to.
Oh, okay. No, you don't need to do that.
Yeah, but I did click through the top five: Chavez, Jones, Hopkins, Pacquiao, and Mayweather.
Okay. Thank you, Bristol, for Connecticut, for being utter idiots. I mean, that's why they're not. That's why they haven't shown any boxing yet this year. They don't know what they're doing.
No. Unbelievable. So they are definitely the train wreck of the week.
Yeah, and here we thought for the first time in history since we'd been doing the train wreck of the week, we didn't have one. But thank you, ESPN, for rescuing us and giving us one.
ESPN bails us out. We love it.
Thank you.
Love it.
Thank you.
All right, well, listen, man, that'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. As always, you can catch Robert on Twitter at Ringside Robert, or you can call Ringside Robbie's Corner at 773-572-7781 and listen to all the podcasts and history lessons. I'm at Ringside 73, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Ringside Reporter podcast. Check us out on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com, on Twitter at Ringside73, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Ringside73. Subscribe to us on iTunes.